Welcome to Own It. We're live from Side by Side in yet another sunny day in San Diego.
Well, it's finally sunny today, actually.
With my very sleep-deprived co-host, Spencer Kroll.
Thank you. I got to actually see the sunrise this morning, which was very pretty.
Oh, well, it was beautiful. Yeah. It was very beautiful.
What were you doing up so early?
I couldn't fall asleep. So
wait,
it was,
you stayed awake?
No, well, not the whole night.
Oh.
I have insomnia issues, but we should introduce our guest.
And that magical voice, which actually I think gives you a run for your money on your voice overture stuff, is Anthony Margulis from Amalfi Estates.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate being here. Yes.
He owns the Dapper Award today.
So he does, actually. And you can't see it, but there you go. Yes.
It is on film.
I love the shoelaces. I love the socks.
And how flexible. I didn't even go to yoga this morning either.
No need, obviously. If you can get it behind your head, that would really...
This is impressive. All right. Well, Amalfi Estates is one of my... I can't say I have favorites because I love all my lovely companies that we partner with, but you are truly one of the first independent, larger brokerages that we partnered with in Southern California, and so you are one of my favorites in that category.
Well, thank you.
You know what's interesting is when I came on board, I had to actually interview with Anthony. Do you remember this? I came to Monument, and I was like, "Uh-oh, I hope I don't mess this up." But I knew you. You know, we've been in the same market for a long time. You know what did impress me though about your organization is that you had an organization. You know, so many teams don't like you had your team meetings, you had these accountability boards, you had vision boards. I mean, you really did the whole thing. That was really impressive.
I want to know what Anthony's philosophy is starting Amalfi Estates to now. Like you run a very, very good company that has structure and organization. Did you start that way or was that morphed into different iterations?
I probably the only one in this room had never sold real estate before I started my company. You could do that at that time, which is kind of an odd concept. Like, I'm going to start a real estate company. I don't know what I don't know. And so I started, I didn't really have a mentor. I didn't know where to get my real estate, license.
What were you doing before that?
I had a mortgage company.
Oh,
so
okay.
I had a real estate development company for a few years, then started a mortgage company the year before the Amalfi opened. But I just remember like not knowing, where do I get the contracts? Like go knocking on the door of the board. I didn't have a mentor. So you're required at that time to take 20 hours of continuing education. And I took 200 hours because I just like, I needed to learn some stuff. So I flew to four different states. I took as many classes and CRS and GRI and LTG and all the alphabet soups. Just to learn because I didn't know. So I had to teach myself all the MLSs and MRMLS and CRS and all the different stuff.
Wow. I haven't even done that.
That's very impressive.
I didn't have a mentor, so I didn't know. I didn't really know what I was, you know. Sure. And I was buyers only. I don't know if you guys ever knew that. We did buyers only. It was AM Realty, buyers only. That was our niche for 6 or 7 years. And then we realized we needed to branch out and do full service and rebranded to Amalfi Estates, did more luxury and changed our logo and changed everything, our branding. Yeah.
And now you have, how large is Amalfi? How many people?
So we have 15 agents on the team and we're just starting doing sub teams, which I know a couple teams are doing. Chad Singer, amazing agent, started our Dallas office. He relocated there, so it was a good fit.
Very
and,
cool. Expansion.
Thanks to Side, helping that facilitate opening up in other markets. So, so he's got a couple sub-teams.
You know, so one of the things in the past 4 years that I've been working with you is the growth that I've seen of the business that your agents are doing. So what, just curious how that comes about. Is that part of the philosophy that you have? Like, what's your... So, how do they achieve this?
Yeah, so I'm in a different stage of my career of doing this 30 years. I know I look a lot younger. Everyone says that, right? You can't be doing this 30 years. You guys should be laughing more with that. No, but it's too early to be joking like this. So after 30 years, I'm moving into the mentoring stage. And my two big whys are how I can support our amazing sales partners and to reach their financial goals and what's on their vision boards. And the second goal is to give as much back to charity as we can. So those are the two focuses, and whatever we can do to expedite that and support that, that's what we do at Amalfi Estates.
And you have a very cool coaching of your own team, and you're reaching out, branching out, and doing more coaching. What kind of a coach are you, or what is your style of coaching that you gravitate to?
Really good question. So I sat in on some amazing coaches yesterday, Kelly Griggs and Danielle, and she was amazing too. I mean, her insight, and they have a lot of energy, and they have a lot of rah-rah, and I'm more of a high C, I'm a spreadsheet guy, I'm like Zaid,
yeah.
Right? I'm in between Zaid and them. So just supporting them and backing it up with systems and finding out what they're great at, what their superpower is, and supporting that. And things that they're not good at, to hire that out and delegate.
You know, so what I thought was really cool is actually in the meeting where I came and interviewed with you, I was watching your team meeting, and you were really holding people accountable to what they said their goals were going to be. And there was one agent there who you can kind of tell was bluffing through stuff. And you, in a very nice way, called them out on it, saying, did you really do this? Or, you know, let's talk about what's stopping you. And I thought it was really cool that it wasn't addressing down. But it was, what do you need from us so that we can help you do this better? And that was a really cool approach.
Oh, thank you. When you want it more than they do, that's when it becomes hard.
Right.
So when you see what's inside of them, I look at them as like a sculpture, a Mona Lisa, the Da Vinci before it was molded. Mm-hmm. We can see inside of them how amazing they're going to be. And a lot of times they may not see it. And I know you two probably see that in a lot of people as well. So our job is to kind of carve it. And bring out what the amazing thing that we see that they may not see, and support it.
Do you think your like analytical and affinity for spreadsheets and all and that kind of a detail comes from mortgage, or was that you growing up?
Yeah, probably growing up. Yeah, I'm less of a people person. I tell people that I enjoy like these bigger groups. It's a little challenging. So one on one is great. It's just the big groups. Like Guy has that issue a little bit. 95% of this room are just high eyes and very social and love talking to people. I'm a social introvert. So
I want to talk about your charity stuff, because you talk about your big why. Were you doing that with mortgage as well, or was this something you
developed in real estate? No, we started 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's morphed. We hired a charitable business consultant 8 years ago to kind of get a business plan and understand how we wanted to incorporate it. We had started off, I realized I didn't have the funds to donate what we wanted to donate. So I thought, well, let's use our time being our time spent selling houses. So we started off selling, giving away 100% from two transactions, and that felt good. We then decided to open it up to all charities and give 10%. Mm-hmm. That got a little wild, wild west. We had about 40 charities that we were giving to. Mm-hmm. And wasn't as impactful. So we hired the charitable consultant. We have 6 different charity partners in different categories for kids and health and pets and homelessness, to name a few. And we let our clients pick. And it really develops a deeper bond with the client. Because when you're talking to them, we're not looked at as a salesperson anymore. Mm-hmm. We're looked at as a community leader. We're looked at as someone who cares about the community. It's a different conversation.
See, I have the cynical question for you, though, because a lot of people start doing this and they say, oh, I'm going to start going to church because it's a great place to get business, or I'm going to start doing this. So chicken or egg, and no judgment, did it start off as this is a great way to get business?
No, I had a really hard time with it. In Judaism, you're not supposed to be promoting your charitable giving. Mm-hmm. And so I talked to my rabbi, and I talked to people I really respected, and I said, I don't want to be touting my horn, you know? And it's evolved. Like, I don't like mentioning what we've given because it creates a different ego. It's almost like telling people how much we've sold. Like, I don't even like going on a stage and telling people, because then everyone feels less than, right? Mm-hmm. Either I sold this number of properties, or I sold this most expensive property, or I sold this volume of properties. And then you always compare. Everyone compares. So I'd rather just say that the people we've helped with the charitable giving. It's just a better messaging. But to answer your question, I think to be authentic with it, you have to really care, right? Mm-hmm. You have to – people see through that. They do, if you're not authentic.
I know a lot of people or a lot of companies are trying to set up some way of charitable giving, and they're having difficulty because if you they're running into, okay, if I donate a certain percentage or dollar figure from each transaction and I let the client, you know, contribute, that might not be as impactful as like waiting until the end of the year and then giving one big lump sum. In your experience, what has worked, what hasn't worked, and how did you...
Well, there's a great answer for that. Just sell more homes. Yeah. It clearly, if they're not that impactful, they're not selling enough homes. The reason we chose six charities is instead of the multitude is to make a more meaningful impact. We're currently one of the top charitable givers in each of the six charities. So it can be amazingly impactful. So we had eight new agents last year. So really it was about 8 to 10 agents gave last year. What we give our team of 8 to 10 companies of 3,000 agents typically give. So it can be impactful and monumental, to any charity. And we like smaller ones in general. I think the local ones are great. You want to know who you're giving it to, and you want to feel like, you know, you have a connection to them.
So how did you guys set it up? Because you were saying that the client gets to choose. So you choose the six charities that you donate to.
Yeah.
And then the client says, I'll pick that one.
And if they say they have one that's really important to them, we'll definitely support that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and we're happy to do it. So what happens is if the agents, let's say on a 50-50 split, they'll give 50% of their 10%, and then the company will give 10% of our other portion.
Sure.
So.
Oh, that's cool.
How important, so when you're recruiting agents or when you've been building it, what are you looking for in terms of, is there something you're looking for character-wise?
Just by nature of, the agent that wants the highest commission split is not the agent that's going to join Amalfi Estates. So Gen Z and millennials are really gravitating toward giving back, and it's really important to them. Yep. It's like culture. Someone will join a team just because the culture is better, not because of a higher split. Oh, they'll stay with a team, I should say, because of the culture, not because of the higher split. And same with Amalfi Estates. They gravitate toward the giving back and helping. And
there was something I was reading about where when you do something for someone else, it makes you feel better than doing something for yourself.
Oh, it does. I think it actually physically does something with like hormonally in your body.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, endorphins.
It's almost selfishly, though. Yeah. People say, because when you give, you just feel good about it, right? When you're helping others. And it's not just writing a check. We actually were on the boards of a lot of these charities, and we visit them and we volunteer, because writing a check isn't sometimes as impactful as actually experiencing it.
Well, you also mentioned millennials and Gen Z. I just heard on the news, I think it was earlier this week, that that matters to where they're looking to work, right? Like when they're changing careers, they're actually looking at the charitable arm of an organization, or if they're working on DEI or whatever it may be, that it's actually positively impacting their community. So I think you hit the nail on the head. You're also very active in making sure, or trying to really make a change in the industry for equal housing opportunities, and you're speaking out about it. I know you spoke on Dr. Phil. Where did that passion come from for housing equality?
It was interesting. It kind of fell in, someone gave me an opportunity to speak on the show. And so I started researching it. My eyes started opening, and I started realizing how horrific the discrimination and people of color are not able to have the same advantages, and how much home ownership is not passed down. And California 3 years ago became a renter state, and the middle class and a lot of people would retire based on the equity they had in their homes. And now they can't. So it's a big problem. And not being of color, we don't experience it as much. And now that I'm hiring a more diverse team, I'm understanding it a lot better, and I'm learning as I go.
Well, we heard yesterday an interesting stat from Mauricio, who's at
70%
of buyers coming up are going to be Latino or in that category. And so what can we do, or what should we be doing in our respective companies and teams to help our teammates better work with the Latino community in fair housing? Because there are a myriad of issues.
Language is important. I know, I don't know if you've talked to Zaid Hanna, but he has 12 different languages spoken on his team. I think the first step is communication and speaking in their language and their native tongue, so they feel comfortable, and having as many people in the cultures that you represent in your town and your city feel comfortable to do that.
And so. And there was a panel yesterday on creative financing, and we were talking to a lender, and he made sure to bring up and said, hey, there are issues with certain groups of people. A lot of them are business owners, self-employed, and so they don't qualify in a traditional box of a mortgage. So you have to educate yourself on out-of-the-box thinking on mortgages and how to help them become homeowners, because we have to shift. Yeah. We have to shift the disparity of home ownership percentages.
I did want to answer a question earlier about leadership. And one thing I learned recently from another book or coach that I had been studying was, when someone comes to you with a problem, we always want to answer that question. I know you're amazing at it. And what I started doing is saying, tell me your problem. Tell me the three solutions to that problem. And then pick the one that you think is best. Yeah. And 99% of the time, you know the answer to this, both of you.
Yeah.
They already know the answer. All they're waiting for is affirmation. But we, being in the business as long as we have, we want to help people. We always like, oh, we're going to take care of it for you.
You know? I mean, it's just the same as teaching kids math, right? When you get to a certain point, when they know it in their head, they don't want to write down how they got themselves there.
Right.
But you have to actually see what the decision-making process is.
And they take the time to think, though.
Right.
So if they're asking a question, 99% of the time, they haven't even started trying to figure it out. They just take the easy shortcut and go to you. Say, look, come back to me. Go research it. Go on Dr. Google. Mm-hmm. Figure this out. Go to whoever you need to go to. And then come back to me.
See, I want to get your opinion on this, though, because I get a lot of questions. A lot of times agents ask me that, you know, is this in the contract? Or, you know, what is the... And so I have a choice to make, right? So I can just give them the answer, or I can say, look at paragraph 12, right?
Right.
What, in your opinion, what do you think is the better thing to do? To give the answer or to say, look at paragraph 12?
I wouldn't say either. I would say, read the contract and tell me.
Okay. I can't do
no,
that.
No, I would say, read the contract and tell me.
Yeah.
You can do a search for that word.
Yeah,
you can do a keyword search.
I'm limited with that answer. I'm limited.
Well,
on
there's
that
ways
one.
To do it nicely.
Yeah.
But look, how are you going to ever teach them?
Right.
What you're doing is you're teaching them to learn. Look, the best way any of our agents, I tell my agents this all the time, we become lecturers, whether we're on the stage or whether we're talking to our team or whether you're talking, and they're kind of listening, but not really. So the best thing we tell our team now is, you need to go teach someone else what I just taught you.
That's
so
great.
Every time we have a meeting now, we'd have a training at 8 o'clock on Thursday mornings, and I said, okay, every week you're going to go teach the 9 o'clock, our 9 o'clock main office meeting, what we just learned at 8 o'clock. I'm not doing it. Like, you were at the 8 o'clock, now you're going to teach the rest of the team. And then we alternate.
Yeah.
So I know you are very into books and constantly learning. What are some books or podcasts or things that you're reading or paying attention to now?
Yeah. Well, yours is great.
Shameless plug. I love it.
Yours
Thanks,
is the
Anthony.
Best one out there. No, I like a lot of them. BAM with Brian Byron. You know BAM?
No.
The BAM podcast series. It's a real estate podcast and Southern California based.
Mm-hmm.
And they always do deep dive analysis of the commission lawsuits and deep dive analysis of a lot of those kind of topics.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really, really helpful. I like Tribe of Millionaires as a good book. If you've ever familiar with Tribe of Millionaires.
No, I'm adding all these to my list.
Yeah.
Is what I'm doing.
It's the 10 people you associate with. So you say to someone, agent on your team, the 10 people you work with, what is their average income? And if you don't know, guess, it's usually you take the 10 of them. That's usually your income. You need to upgrade, you know, maybe who you're associating with, but you can use it for character as well. So the people that hang out with, whether they're optimistic or whether they're passionate or whether they're givers or whether they're, you know, how they see the world.
Yeah.
Right. And it says a lot. So it's about top grading your sphere. So,
I need to upgrade my friends.
Yeah.
80%.
You're fine.
Am I still in your friend circle?
You don't have to stay in. I just need better.
Do you know 80% is good enough? That's a great one.
Oh.
No.
This is,
I know. See, this is great.
No.
Yeah, because what happens is there's too many perfectionists. And what they always say, what is the best CRM? It's the one you
use.
Use, right?
Yeah.
So 80% is good enough. You just have to do it.
Well,
right?
See, okay, let's talk about this topic because this is a good one. There are so many realtors who are stuck because they want to put out a perfect product, a perfect video, a perfect, an ad or something, and they get stuck nitpicking the details, and it's so much better to hurry up and just get something out. You can always do V2, V3, but if you don't have anything, you have nothing.
Right. And it's just jump in and do it. 80% is good enough. Oz Principle is a great one. Do you guys know Oz Principle?
No,
This is enlightening. You know this? Do you read? We read comic books. Yeah. We read Archie and Veronica.
So the Oz principle is great because it. A lot of times when we have a difficult agent or a difficult employee, we'll say, oh, that person, you know, oh, they're, and we blame, right? We victimize. And if you take ownership of it and say, what could I have done better so that didn't happen, Les becomes a victim, and then we take ownership back. Mm-hmm. And it's an incredibly powerful book to read.
So are you reading, or are these audio books?
Audio.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I what I used to do, and I should probably get back into this, is I would buy the book and get the audio book. And I would read the book as I'm listening to it, because then I can underline and stuff like that along the way. I felt that that was
pretty good. Have been good in law school.
I would have been good in law school. Ninja Selling.
See? I love Ninja Selling.
Ninja Selling.
Yeah, you have heard of that.
I have heard of. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
The ideas in that book are revolutionary. Really good for a new agent.
It's so funny talking to you, because I'm thinking of all the things that I wanted to implement and that I've lost along the way. Do you have to remind yourself of certain things?
We do an accomplishments page. I have my whole team do it. So we write down everything big and small, mm-hmm. business and personal. And I've done it for 28 years now. So you look back and you go, wow, look how far we've come. So whenever you have a down day, you can look at your accomplishments page and go, and it comes up with your kids. You know, your kids learn to... a math problem, or they learn to walk or ride a bike or went to a college or whatever the things are, mm-hmm. you know, and personal things too, you know, losing weight or running a marathon. And so the accomplishments page has been amazing, just transformative, just by looking back at it and seeing how far you came, because we don't realize, like you look back last year, look back what Side's done, look about all these little steps that got us where we are. Your podcast, right? These are all like things on an accomplishments page, so...
Yeah, I think that's very important, especially when you get to the end of a year and people are reflecting and, you know, all they think of is, oh, 2023 was a horrible year in real estate, whatever, whatever. But that actually would show that you did accomplish a lot of things. You started something new. You, you know, tied the bow on some project you were working on. But that's a smart idea. So what are your goals for 2024? Since we're at the beginning of the year, what are you hoping to accomplish?
Well, my two big goals: give as much as I can to charity and help support our team to reach their financial goals. Those are my two big. Yeah.
Do you do that on an individual level with your team members?
Yeah,
sit down?
Meet with them weekly. Okay. Yeah, and I borrowed from Brett Jennings had an amazing 15 question. I don't know if you guys saw that, but he does with his team. I'm like, I'm going to borrow that.
Yeah.
And so it's more intentional about how they're doing and how their last week went and what worked and what didn't work.
We were talking to Brett yesterday, and it's the same mentality. And I'm curious where you got that mentality, which is pour more into others and you will, you know, your life will be more enriched by giving to others and coaching and making them better.
I mean, doesn't everyone have, I mean, it's
no,
it's
a, no they don't.
I mean, no.
It's a plentiful mentality.
I know, but that is so different. Most people, I would argue, and I don't know that there's any research to back it up, have a scarcity mindset, not the opposite.
I mean, I see positive in everyone. My wife's always saying, you know, I can't stand gossip. Okay, it's just my pet peeve. So I'm always saying good in people. She's like, why do you always say good about everyone? You know, like that. Everybody you meet, you say find something good with.
Yeah.
Even if you had a difficult deal or you're this and that. I'm like, because there is good in everyone. You have to see what's there. What we always tell our agents is, if there's a real emergency, call 911. The great thing about our business is no one's dying. You know, we're not surgeons. We're not doing brain surgery.
Yeah.
And we get kind of worked up a lot.
Yeah.
And what I tell them is there's four people in a transaction. There's a listing agent, the buyer's agent, the buyer, and the seller. And if all the other three are amazing, it's nirvana. It's the best experience in real estate. And if one's bad, it's tough. If two are bad, if three... It can make your life very, very challenging.
You
know,
but you talk about how you're a spreadsheet guy, and yet instead I'm hearing this philosophical, very warm energy.
Optimistic.
Coming from you. But optimistic, but also just kind of this very zen sort of feeling.
Yeah.
And did you develop that, or have you always been this way?
So when you have a life-threatening issue, so I had cancer 30 years ago. I had a 25% chance of survival. Oh. I had stage 4 cancer. So once you go through that, everything's you kind of relax a little bit. So
that's
I think that may be part
changing.
Of it.
That would be life changing. Yeah.
I met my wife. I mean, how lucky am I?
Aww.
She was my nurse in the hospital.
Are you serious?
Oh, that's a great story.
Wow. Yeah.
And I had to pick her up. I was at a children's hospital of all things. I was 26 years old because the type of cancer I had affects children. And but I was the oldest patient in the hospital.
Yeah.
So I had no competition. It really worked out well.
This is the best part.
Yeah, that's, yeah. That's worked out well.
Well, all right. So then the question is, how do you engender that feeling when you don't go through that? Because life is just as precious.
Yeah.
Well, Brett on the podcast yesterday we recorded, his way of getting there was meditation. Years of meditation, and that's where he got that feeling or that experience. So
Brett's incredibly insightful. Every time I talk to him, I'm like, you know, mind expanding. Yeah, I'm more simple minded. I'm a very simple. I'm not as smart as many people here. I just work hard, try and get back, and support our team.
But simply speaking, life is short. Enjoy every day. Do your best. Give to others. Anthony, as we wrap up, I want to thank you, first of all, but I want to be able to tell our listeners where they can find Amalfi Estates on social media, or how can they follow what you're doing.
Social media.
You guys have a presence.
Are you on Instagram and all that?
Someone does that for me. Yes. People are like, give me your Instagram handle. Give me your... yes, we're on Instagram somewhere. Type in Amalfi Estates. Go to our website.
We'll put it in the show notes. We'll do a shortcut for you.
Yeah. Am I the only one who said that?
I'm no.
I love it.
No, thank you guys for doing everything you guys do. I really appreciate it. And you're what makes SIDE so amazing.
Well, we feel the same way about you.
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. No, it's exciting. And we'll put where everybody can find you in the show notes, along with a link or the names of all the books that you mentioned. So that would be very helpful.
A long list.
Well, you know what? I'm going to have to go back and reference it.
Yeah, me too.
Audiobook.
Yeah. Yep. From us at Own It, thank you. We hope you have a wonderful day, and come join us on another episode of Own It. You can always email Anthony through us at ownit@side.com. So thank you both, gentlemen.
Thank you, Hillary.
Thank you.